When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello, welcome to the Snooker Scene Podcast. I'm Dave Hendon. I'm delighted this week to be joined by the latest name on the list of snooker ranking event winners, Jordan Brown, Welsh Open champion, of course, recently. How are you, Jordan?
I'm all right, Dave. How are you?
Very well, thanks. We'll obviously get to that in detail later on, but let's start at the very beginning. How did you get into snooker?
It started when I was about 5 years old. My dad bought me a table for Christmas. He saw that I was obviously watching it on TV and sort of had like an interest in it. So just went from there, really. Went to go into the living room every day after school, hit a few balls and that. So, yeah, just went from there.
And at what point did you realise that, A, it wasn't just another hobby, and B, that actually you were quite good at it? You know, you had some talent for it.
I think I learned very quickly, you know, was building the breaks. It was a small table. It was only like a 6 foot table, but it was like 30 breaks, then gradually improving 40 breaks. And then my dad eventually took me down, I think when I was about 9, when I first played on a full size table. Small breaks to start off with, again, 20, 30 breaks. And I realized I was getting really good whenever I was breaking the 50, 60 mark. I was improving quite quickly. It was only about 13 where I really took it seriously, you know, going from hobby to, you know, wanting to do something with it, you know. So, yeah, it was around about that time where I thought that's, you know, I've got something here.
And why do you think it was that you were sort of taken with it, as opposed to maybe, I don't know, playing football or golf or whatever? Why do you think, was it just because you felt you were good at it, or is there something about snooker that, you know, is sort of attractive to you?
I think I had an obsession with snooker in general, Dave, from the start. I watched it on TV. I watched Stephen Hendry lift all the trophies. Ronnie, obviously, was breaking through at the time. It's just the whole game, really. I was just fantasized with it all. Snooker's in my blood. You know, I love the game inside out, as well as, you know, being in a privileged position to, you know, to play it for a living. So, yeah, it just really went from there.
And you're in quite a small part of the world in Northern Ireland, but a very good one for snooker. Obviously, they have the history, Alex and Dennis and so on. They have also, most importantly, when you were growing up, a structure whereby you weren't just knocking balls around in a club. You could play junior tournaments and you could sort of progress as an amateur.
Yeah, I was very fortunate back in the junior days, because there was a lot of people around my level that were all good players, but especially the likes of Mark, and there's another few players that were better than me. So I learned my trade very early on. I started at a junior tournament, so I think my first one was 14. I found it tough at the start, you know, because, you know, you need to, that's what makes you as a player, really. You know, you have to take the bashings, and, you know, you learn more from losses whenever you win. So it was a tough whole process, but I started getting results. I started winning a couple of junior tournaments and just worked my way up the ladder, and then eventually started doing well in the senior tournaments. So it was good pedigree coming through. Very fortunate, obviously, like having the likes of Mark Allen in the club, because I saw his progression at the start. You know, the first time I saw him play, he was 13, and I thought, well, who's this guy here? And he beat me 2-0 in about 20 minutes. It was about, I think he had a century and a 70, and I was mesmerised by how he was playing. So, I was very fortunate, especially to have the likes of Mark around. We've been partners for the guts of 20 years now. So,
can you remember the first event you won? Because that would have been, to get that first trophy, that would have been very exciting.
Oh, it's testing the memory. I think I won a junior tournament. I think it was an under 16. I can't remember exactly when it was. I remember my first senior event, actually. I remember it very well. I actually won my first final 6-1 against Martin O'Neill. I'm not too sure if you've heard the name. It was good memories. You know, it was obviously, I was a quick learner, quick quickly improved. And there was a lot of good times there. You know, I do miss them in a way. You know, because there's a lot of great competition. Like there was 100 entries in most of the tournaments back then. Even in the junior tournaments, you're very lucky to get maybe 9 or 10 nowadays. It's very poor. Back then, there was at least 30, 40, you know, because it was every weekend. You were going Saturday morning, you were traveling to a junior tournament somewhere. Sunday, you were traveling to a senior event. There was always something to look forward to. So that's where I think it's lacking nowadays. You know, there's not a lot of events that are well run right now, it's fair to say. But it is getting back there. You know, Northern Ireland as a whole is good. Good interest in the game, and that's why we all get behind each other so well.
Eventually you won, well, not eventually, you were still young, you won the Northern Ireland Championship, which is a lot of great names on that roll of honour. So that was a breakthrough, wasn't it? Suddenly you're top amateur now in your country.
Yes, 2008, I think it was. I won 10-9 in the black, which was I love the deciders, so sort of,
yeah.
It was, you know, it was good memories that time as well, you know, because I think that was whenever I was starting to really break through. I was starting to get very consistent in the senior events. I eventually became number one amateur in the country. And then whenever I eventually won the 2009 Northern Ireland Championship, I had to win the tournament to turn professional. So whenever I did turn pro, it was only 6 tournaments back then. You know, it was like yourself, Dave, it was very, very poor, and you had like weeks in between events. You know, you're basically playing part time, really. But yeah, it was. I'm very proud, you know, to win the Northern Ireland Championship. Some great names that have won it, and some names that haven't won it, like Sir Joe Swale. He never won it, so to be in that list of names, I was very proud. Yeah.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about turning pro, because I think you probably turned pro at probably the worst time in the last 40 years. All the sort of 80s and 90s, that honeymoon had gone. It was before Barry Hearn took over in this last 10-year era. You were just in between the two. And like you say, only 6 tournaments. And crucially, only a 1-year card. You didn't have the 2-year card that you have now. So you were right up against it from the start, weren't you? You're thrown in, first of all, to playing against players of a much higher standard. So that's hard enough. But you had no time at all to find your feet. And like you say, because of the gaps between events, you know, you couldn't build up any momentum at all.
No, you couldn't get any rhythm. Like you say, weeks in between events. I was working part-time as well. I think that's where I had to, you know, because the money was very poor back then, it's fair to say, before the Barry Hearn era. Two matches to win something like £1,400 wasn't great. And I didn't make much. It was very hard to make any money at all, and very hard to progress up the rankings. I think even Tony Drago won like 10 matches the same season I turned pro, and I think he just about stayed on the tour. So that just goes to show you how difficult it was back then. It did need a good revamp, and that's why we're so lucky to have Barry Hearn coming into the game. But like you say, it was a long time, but I was realistic with myself. Back then, I sort of just wanted to learn from the experience. You know, I didn't expect to stay on. It was very hard to, anyway. But I think that sort of stood me in good stead for the future. And yes, it did take a little bit longer than I expected to get back onto the tour. Only turned pro again there 3 years ago. So it was a few years in the doldrums, you know, but I never stopped trying, and I never stopped believing in myself.
Well, that's what I was going to say, because like you said at the start, snooker's in your blood. So it seems to me there weren't any moments where you thought, actually, maybe this isn't for me. You were still very much focused on, okay, you've got to earn a living as well, but snooker is still part of my life. And you were sort of almost playing the long game in a way. You know, you're going to, at some point, make it back on.
Yeah. I always believed that I was good enough to get back on, Dave, but it's all about discipline and all about putting the hard work in. And there were moments, a lot of moments actually, where I just wasn't prepared to do it. Mm. You know, at the start, I thought, well, I've been pro once, I'll turn pro again. That was all down to me, really. You know, I just messed about a bit off the table, just didn't really want to do the practice. But, you know, it was about 5 years ago. It was well documented in the interview that there was a good turning point. Just decided to just put the effort in and just put the hard work in, because no matter how talented you are, and I'll say that to any junior, you need to be prepared to make sacrifices and put the work in. So, yeah, it just, I think that sort of made me as a player that I am now, you know, because I have been at the lowest point, you know, in my time off. So, yeah, it just made me a good stead there for the future.
If it was a film, we would see this moment. It'd be almost like, you know, the middle of the night, you'd walk into the bathroom and look yourself in the mirror and all that sort of thing. Was it like that, or was it maybe you were approaching 30 and you're realistic enough to know that actually you don't have forever to do it?
Yeah, because I actually saw like some players, not naming any names, but there were some players on there where I thought, well, I thought I was better than him. You know, it just sort of woke me up a little bit. It made, gave me the kick up the backside that I needed to go down and put the yards in. And that's what I've done. And I finally got my rewards 3 years ago when I turned professional. And then the belief was always there. Like, I always keep saying that, but you know, you need to really believe in yourself. And I think that's what I always have done, because Snooker's in my blood and it never left the system, so to speak.
A lot was made, and we'll obviously come to the Welsh Open later on, but a lot was made of the fact you'd worked in a petrol station. And I think the reason is that we're used now, it's very different to snooker 40 years ago, but we're used now to players essentially leaving school and coming into snooker as a career. So the great champions we think of, the Ronnies, the Higginses, Mark Williams, they've never actually had another job. They've just come straight into snooker. I think the reason a lot of people took to your story is they recognised actually you put in the hours, yes, on the snooker table, but you had to balance that with the real life, which everyone understands is you have to earn a living. So was that, how difficult was that to be working? I'm not quite sure what your hours were in the petrol station, but to be working a day's work and then fit in the time to put in quality practice as well.
Well, I'll just start by saying it was very difficult because I was getting up at 5:30, 6:30 every morning, freezing cold mornings, going into work, doing a day's work. And then whenever you do a day's work, all you want to do, like a normal person would,
yeah,
go home and sit and relax, chill on the sofa, have your dinner and watch the TV for the rest of the night. I couldn't really do that because I felt like I still had something to achieve. Like I keep saying, I always believed in myself. That's why I went down and put the hours in. Like I was only maybe coming home, having an hour's kip, having my dinner, and then going down maybe 7 o'clock in the evening. Sometimes I wasn't coming home till midnight, and then I had to do it all over again the next day. So I didn't have much sleep during the week, but listen, these are the things that you got to do. You know, it was hard, but I think that's what made me better as a person rather than a player.
So you did get back on through the Q School. Do you think you changed? I mean, obviously you got older, maybe more mature, but were you a better player, do you think, second time? And also, obviously, you must have thought, at least I've got a bit of security now, because with this 2-year card and more tournaments to play in, it's actually is now. There's opportunities for it to be more of a profession than what it was before, as you say, which was sort of part-time activity almost.
Yeah, definitely. I think back then when I turned pro, obviously I was still working and stuff, but whenever I turned pro this time around, it was basically 2 weeks after my job, I handed them a 2 weeks notice and just thought, right, if I'm going to do this here, I'm going to give absolutely everything. So just basically treated like a job from day one, really. Put the hours in every day, you know, going to tournaments, you know, because you don't really have a chance to, you know, come back and settle at home, really. You're coming back 1 week and then you're going away the next week. Obviously, me coming from Northern Ireland, there's a lot more extra travelling involved, flying over, getting ferries over, obviously, in recent times of lockdown. So, yeah, it has to be treated with the respect it deserves, because we have so many tournaments, so many earning opportunities. You know, thanks to Barry Hearn and all at World Snooker again, giving us the opportunity, especially in these times. So it's the right time to get on. And I think, you know, during my career, I've always been got a good perspective of, you know, putting the effort in, you know, when the time's right. And yeah, so it's been enjoyable a couple of years, and obviously I was close to traveling off last season. And I being a ranked tournament winner, it's fulfill my dream.
Yeah, I think it's worth saying that a lot was made of the fact that you may be made in age terms a late breakthrough, but actually this is only your fourth season on the tour. I mean that's comparable. It's a different thing, but for example, Mark Williams, he won a ranking event in his fourth season, but obviously he was much younger because he came on and stayed on in those days. So in some ways your breakthrough is actually quite quick in a way. It's just it's how people see it, I guess. But let's talk about, okay, so you're back on the tour. The improvements seem to be coming. And like you say, last year to qualify for the Crucible, to keep on the tour is huge. But the chance to play there, albeit, of course, in the end, with no audience. So what was that like to play at the Crucible? I know you're a big sort of geek like I am in terms of snooker. So, you know, to play there, it's the holy grail, absolutely. But it's not the same as everything you've seen watching on TV. No crowd.
No, that, I've got to be honest, that was a little bit crippling because I was looking forward to, I think the Crucible crowd, you know, sort of makes it what it is. You know, you get the oohs and the ahs. You don't get that anywhere else. Well, not many places anyway. Maybe Alexander Palace, maybe the Temper Drum. But the Crucible is so unique. It's so rich in its history. And, you know, I've always been obsessed as a snooker fan, you know, watching it over the years. You know, lived and breathed, you know, every moment with some of the players, you know, because it does create its own drama. So that was a little bit of a sickener to qualify for the first time and just all typical, you know, lockdown hit and, you know, the rules and regulations came in at the time. You know, I think it was the day before that they're announcing there was no crowds. So, yeah, that was disappointing. But listen, I wouldn't swap it for the whole Crucible experience, you know, crowd or no crowd. I lived and breathed every minute of it and soaked it all up and just used it as a great experience. And, you know, it'll want me to get back there again, you know, because whenever things calm down, there'll be crowds. I believe there's going to be crowds in this year. Hopefully that's the case. And hopefully I'm one of the 32 players involved.
Well, it's certainly true. If you look at pretty much every top player lost on their Crucible debut, Ronnie did, Higgins, Hendry, all these guys, it takes a bit of getting used to even without a crowd. And of course you're playing an absolute master there, Mark Selby. Although he did struggle a bit, didn't he? Were you sort of disappointed a little bit with maybe the match? Because he can win when he's not at his best, we know that. But he wasn't at his best, really, was he? And the match got a little bogged down in places. I know, because I commentated on every frame of it.
Didn't put you to sleep, did it? playing Mark Selby, I was actually very happy with the draw because, you know, it's always going to be a very tough ask, you know, because they're the top 16 players in the world. Whoever you play there, it's going to be really tough. But playing Mark Selby, you want to test yourself against one of the greats in the biggest stage of all, which I was very privileged to do last year. Playing Mark Selby was always going to be a difficult task, but it didn't stop me believing that I could win. You know, I obviously proved in the Welsh Open final, being one of the greatest in Ronnie, that I can do it. So on reflection afterwards, I was very disappointed with the result, and especially the way I played, because I felt like he was there for the taking over the 2 days, you know, because he did struggle both days. I feel like if I had sort of, you know, improved a little bit in the match, I think I would definitely have won. But listen, you know, it's an invaluable experience and, you know, it'll stand me in good stead for the next time.
Well, let's get on to the Welsh. But before we do, the signs were there, weren't they? Because you got to your first quarterfinal at the German Masters, obviously in Milton Keynes, as all the events were then. Did you feel, and maybe it was sort of a bounce from the Crucible, a bit more confident? You kept your place on the tour. You made that important step playing at the World Championship. Could you feel yourself maybe feeling more confident during the season?
Yeah, well, I finished off the season in no better way, really, qualifying for the Crucible. So I knew my form was there. Coming into the season, I was getting some consistent results, but I was a little bit disappointed because, you know, I just couldn't get past the last 32, which was very difficult. It's difficult to win matches as it is, you know, it's like a bloodbath, you know, sometimes. But especially in recent times, I've got the quarterfinals of the German Masters and I knew something was there going into the Welsh Open. I just felt like I was coming to near enough my best, you know, and I was starting to get a little bit of consistency in my game. You know, just thought if I can realistically get the another last 16 or a quarter final, you know, not happy enough, but, you know, just sort of gradually progressing all the time. But never did I envisage what was going to happen, obviously. So, yeah, my form has been good all season, really, but especially in recent times, you know, because of putting in the hard work and I'm learning things all the time. I've made small improvements in the game. My coach, Marty Bramwell, back home, me and him have been working closely back home. Just to get my game, you know, where I feel like it should be. So, yeah, it's just a combination of hard work and dedication that's got me to that.
Well, let's talk about that week in Newport. It started quite nicely, a whitewash. But then the close matches started. Now, as you know, obviously, those multi-table matches, unless someone in your position in the rankings isn't playing a top player, you're going to play early rounds at the back. So we didn't necessarily see your matches, but we saw the results, and we saw that you were winning all these deciders. You beat Sam Craigie, you beat Alex Ersenbach and Mark King, all 4-3, to get through to the quarterfinals. Were there any times in those matches, because I say we didn't see them, where you basically could have lost, maybe should have lost? I mean, we talked about, you know, obviously the Selby match we'll come to and Ronnie in the final, but early on, it seemed, you know, like it was all very tight.
Well, first of all, I beat a very, very good player, Liu Honghao. He's one of the tougher ones, you know, in around the 50-60 mark. And it's hard to believe that he is in a position that he could fall off a tour. It just goes to show you how hard it is. But a nice win against him. So that really just, obviously, the first round gets you the ranking points and the money and that. So it settles you down right away and you feel a small part of the tournament, but obviously a long way to go. I played Sam Craigie. Very, very tough player, talented. I feel like he could have done better, you know, for the talent that he has. But I was actually down and out in all those matches that you mentioned. He had a red in the middle, Sam. And if he had got it, the balls were just sitting there in the decider. They went 4-3. Could have lost there. Against Alexander Ersenbacher, it was probably the worst match I've played all tournament, you know, especially the first half, because it was 3-1 down, just could not get anything going at all. And he was on a break in the next, and I was actually getting ready to go home. Mm. So it was because he didn't play that well, but the balls were sitting so nicely. I thought, right, well, just put this down to a bad performance, go back home. And I would have thought not much more of it. It's just wee things like that, you know, were starting to happen and, you know, made me start to think, oh, hang on a wee second, I'll have a chance here. So I came back to beat Alex 4-3, and then Mark King, we all know what he's like. He's a very gritty match player, never makes it easy for you. And I felt like it was a good game. It wasn't the heaviest score in the contest, but there was some really, really good safety play. And if anything, not matching, but I felt like my safety was better than his in a way. I think that's what made me create a lot of chances. You have to work so hard for your chances against somebody like Mark. I was 3-2 down and he was in the balls in that frame, the deciding frame. He was in amongst the balls as well, and he had his chance to win. So things are starting to make me believe, right, could this be my week? You know, but obviously what was to happen with the draw that I had, you can never have saw that coming.
Yeah, well, first up, obviously, quarterfinals, Mark Selby. That turned into a sort of war almost, didn't it? It was such a hard-fought match. You know, he's stolen a frame after snookers needed. Last frame was, to use Jimmy's word, Shredsville, all over the place, wasn't it? Comes down to the last black. He has a chance to pot it, misses. That's almost a sign, again, that maybe there's a sort of fate to all this, because you back Mark normally to pot a ball like that, you know, under pressure. He didn't. And you obviously swooped in and won the match.
Yeah. That's actually probably the hardest match I've ever been involved in, even harder than the Crucible experience, you know, because it just makes it so hard for you and puts you out of your comfort zone. But like I told myself to do the rest of the term, which we'll come to obviously in a minute. You know, I just thought, just play the balls, not the player. Just focus on what I was doing. I knew my game was good enough. And I felt like I actually played and probably matched him in every department, you know, because if he can live with him in the safety play and the tactical side, you know, that's a start, really. So I gave myself every chance to win that match from the very start. But obviously what happened at the end, you know, was very dramatic, you know, because obviously snookers required, he kept getting them. And then it came down to the black ball, and it's reminiscent of that Henry Williams black in the 8th final. I actually remember watching it, and I thought, these can be missed. I was actually had that thought in my head, you know, this isn't the easiest of blacks of crossing that. And whenever I didn't expect him to miss it, you know, but when he did, you know, I just sort of got himself together and potted it, and it was just sheer relief more than anything. Because if you can beat Mark Selby, then, you know, you feel like you can beat anyone.
Well, next you had to beat Steve Maguire, and it was a very different match. You just played brilliantly from the start. You made a 1-3-5 in the first frame, string of breaks, good clearance as well. Is that do you think that's the best you've ever played in that match? I mean, it was really impressive.
I've actually said it many times to my family and friends that that is without question the best performance I've ever played. Because right from the very off, I put a long red and made 135. That just settled me right down, and I was just enjoying every minute of it, you know, because from here on in, there was just sort of like in a bit of a free roll almost, because, you know, I had realistic goals at the start of the season, getting the quarter final, and, you know, if I could push through a semi final, you know, I'd be happy. But you obviously want to win tournaments, you know, but you sort of have to set yourself realistic goals, you know, to follow your path. And but against Stephen, from the off, I played really, really well. Put him on the back foot early. Put a lot of pressure on him. And I think it was a fair reflection of the result, you know, because I never really gave him a sniff for most frames. So, yeah, very, very pleasing that victory.
And now, and of course, you would know winning that, whoever you played in the final, it was going to be a legend. It's either Ronnie or Mark Williams. It turned out to be Ronnie. I just wonder, it's going to cast your mind back to that morning, that Sunday morning when you wake up. You've achieved an ambition. You're in a final. How did you feel? Did you feel, okay, in a way, I've got nothing to lose? Or is it actually, you know, this is a chance and who knows when the next one will come along to win a title? How were you sort of feeling before the match? Because, of course, you made a good start. You know, you went 4-1 up, which suggested you were feeling good about things.
Yeah, well, done it the hard way, obviously, getting to the final. You know, you couldn't have asked for a much more tougher path, especially from the quarterfinals onwards. So there was obviously no reason to believe why I couldn't have won the final. I always believed that I could win. Otherwise, what's the point showing up? You have to sort of, you have to be realistic. Obviously, you know, it's going to be a tough ask against the greatest of all time. But I just had this strategy where if I can go in and just play the balls rather than the player, because we all know what Ronnie can do. He can steamroll our opponents very easy. But I just wasn't going to let that happen that day, and I just thought I gave myself every chance, and so it proved. You know, I held myself together, 4-1 up, playing great. But you're always preparing for him to come back at you, you know, because you know we all know we can get on a roll very easy. But just stuck to the task and stuck to my guns, and that carried it through the whole day, really.
I don't know what you think, Jordan, but to me, one of the big frames was the 12th frame, the last one before the interval, because he'd gone in front at 6-5. And the sort of logic from what we've seen over the years is, OK, he's got you now, he's going to pull away. And you dug in that frame. It was a tough frame. You dug in, you've got six each at the interval. Did that then give you, did that sort of restore the belief that maybe it started to just waver a little bit? Because, as I say, you've seen it from your seat. You know, so many times you've watched it on TV, Ronnie O'Sullivan getting in front and then sort of pulling away and winning.
Yeah, I was aware of the fact, what being 5-3 up, I thought, right, just be prepared, you know, for Ronnie to come back, you know, because you have to expect it, you know, because it's a big final. He's one of the all-time greats. He's been there before. He's gonna do it again. I was hoping it wasn't going to be that night, but it was 5-3 up, and then he's going to 6-5. I actually started feeling really nervous, because during the first session, I was actually quite relaxed and just enjoying it. Started to feel really nervous when he, especially when I won 6-5. And don't forget, he was a positional shot away. I think he pulled the yellow and didn't get on the green properly. Had to play safe. If he lands on the green at 7-5, and you know, in my own head, I thought, right, okay, this is going to be really, really tough now. It's going to be a tall order from here. But that was a massive frame, and that gave me that extra little bit of a G up, and you know, firmly believe that I can go on and win, you know, because it was actually the first time in the whole tournament I actually went to the practice table during an interval, because I felt like my game, I felt like my QM wasn't great, I felt like my confidence was away. So I just needed to restore some of that belief that, you know, I can still do this. And yeah, we all know what happened from then on.
Yeah, well, you went 8-7 up. He made a crazy century, really, to level up. He gets in first, pots the first ball in the decider, takes on quite a low percentage pot, I think we've got to say. You get your chance, but of course, you have to take it. And this is the biggest frame of your life now, isn't it? This is the biggest moment of your life. You look cool. I mean, you made a 74 to win the tournament. How are you feeling inside? How did you, well, more to point, how did you stay cool?
It was so many people have said this to me. How do you remain so calm? You know, I honestly didn't feel like it. My heart was skipping beats and everything. It was so nerve-wracking, but I just had to tell myself just to be focused and just concentrate on every single shot 100%, you know, because you know, this is your time, this is your moment, you know, can you stand up to the pressure? I kept just telling myself, can you do this? Of course you can. Obviously, with the four deciding frames that I had in the tournament previous, you know, coming to another deciding frame, all my friends were winding me up back home saying, Oh, you love a decider. I really don't love a decider. I'd rather not go to that stage. But yeah, because I had all those deciders and everything that's happened, beforehand, there's no reason why I couldn't do it again. And obviously, it's by miles it's the best break I've ever played under pressure. Because it doesn't come much tougher than that.
So you've done it. It's over. You get the trophy, all the ticker tape, everything. But was there a slight sort of bittersweet feeling? Because all the people who supported you, your family, your friends, your coach, all those people who would normally be there for a big occasion, of course they weren't there. Was that slightly, I mean, nothing could be done about that, no one's fault, but maybe it's not what you envisaged when you thought about yourself winning a tournament.
No, it was unfortunate. I'm going to be honest. I would love to have had my family and friends over, especially obviously who I mentioned in the speech, Marty, Catherine, and my girlfriend, or Martin, Catherine, my girlfriend, and my father. It'd be nice to sort of add even one of those guys, just sharing that moment with me. But listen, I wouldn't swap it for anything. Everybody was going nuts back home. I think I had most of Northern Ireland at a standstill. Yeah, it would have been nice to share it with someone, but listen, the feeling that I had at the end, I was overjoyed. It was emotional. It was just something that I've always dreamed about, since I started watching the game, playing the game whenever I was a little boy. Yeah, it was just an overwhelming feeling of emotion, I suppose. Yeah.
And it must have been nice as well. Obviously, it was nice to hear the words from Ronnie. Ronnie was incredibly gracious, wasn't he, afterwards? He must have been disappointed. Fourth final, sorry, third final at that point that he lost that season, but he couldn't have been nicer about it.
I think that's what made me even more emotional, whenever I was doing my speech, because he was saying such nice things about me, and I'm sort of like pinching myself. This is my idol, saying these words. It was flattering to say the least, because we all know what Ronnie's like. He can say a few things that he probably doesn't mean, but you can just tell he was so genuine. And that's what really meant a lot to me more than anything else, because he's been the benchmark for everybody on tour, and he's an inspiration to everybody. So yes, it was mind-boggling, I've got to say.
How long in the immediate aftermath did it sort of take for it all to sink in? It must have taken a few days, because obviously you had to go straight to Milton Keynes to play the next tournament, as we know. But I suppose
Yeah.
was it maybe when you got home and you saw everyone, was that when things started to get sort of real?
I've got to be honest, David, it's still not sinking in really, because it's such a huge achievement, and it's sort of can't quite believe it's happened to me of all people. Because I'm just a normal bloke who just enjoys playing snooker for a living, and this thing isn't just supposed to happen really, but it has happened, and I'm enjoying every minute. And obviously with the quick turnaround in tournaments nowadays, you don't really have time to sort of celebrate or dwell on things. You're straight back into it, and that's what I wanted to do straight away, really. I just wanted the dust to settle, get back home, have a few days off, and get back to the practice table, get ready for the next tournament. Because obviously there's going to be a little bit of expectation on me now. It's up to me to quickly find a little bit of form again, and go into the next tournament and hopefully do well in it.
Yeah, of course. Obviously, you had to play the Players' Championship, lost 6-0 to John Higgins, and I think people thought, "Oh, it's come too quickly for him." But then John then battered everyone else in the tournament, including Ronnie. He just played unbelievable, didn't he?
Yeah, it was a little bit of, I've got to be, no point lying about it, there was a little bit of a hangover from the Welsh Open, just like I say, a quick turnaround. Only had 3 days to really prepare, and I barely had a chance to go even down to the practice table because I had so much press and so much, attention, the media spotlight. Just never really got a minute and hardly slept for a couple of days. So I wish I had maybe a week off in between, but listen, that's just the nature of the way the tour is these days. Nobody can complain. Then I played Rod Lawler in the Gibraltar Open. Got off to a slow start and made a couple of breaks to get about back to three all. And then he made a great break in the decider. So it's not like I've played badly since. It's just been, players maybe just getting themselves up for a wee bit more, I think, because they're obviously aware of the fact that I am a tournament winner. So yeah, it's up to me now just to sort of crack on and make sure it wasn't a one-off that Welsh Open win.
Yeah, and you've got a lot to look forward to now. Obviously, you've already gone up the rankings. You've got a good platform to maybe push on towards, top 32. Champion of Champions is coming up later in the year. All this stuff, all the rewards are there, aren't they? Aren't they from winning a tournament like this. It must be exciting looking ahead to sort of the next few months.
Oh yeah, of course it is. I'm actually looking forward to, in a way, having a bit of time off after the World Championships. Mm-hmm. But in the meantime, I'm going to get myself properly ready. I've got 3 weeks now, two matches to get to the Crucible. I really want to get back there, you know, because like we talked about earlier on, the experience last year, a little bit disappointing. But hopefully it'll have crowds in, and it'll have, you know, the attention that the World Championships deserve. And yeah, I'm really looking forward to it, and already looking forward to next season as well.
You talk about expectation. I suppose there's quite a bit from other people now. Maybe you'll be on TV more than you were, but also I guess your own expectation you've got to deal with as well. You look at yourself differently now. You're a tournament winner. I guess you want to keep going, keep doing well. How do you think you'll cope with that next season? You've already shown great mental strength, obviously, to come through, firstly to get back on the tour, then to win this event. But now you're in uncharted territory in a way, aren't you? You haven't had this before. So how do you feel you're going to sort of deal with it?
It's going to be difficult, you know, because I've actually spoke to other players about it. I spoke to Kyron Wilson, actually, at the Players' Championship, and he actually made me feel a little bit better. You know, it was just after I lost to John, and he says, listen, I lost another few matches after I won his, I think his first term was Shanghai Masters.
Yeah,
he won that probably before he expected as well. It's a similar sort of thing happened to him, and look what's went on to happen for him. He's a tournament winner now, and he's up in the top eight in the rankings, what fully deserved, you know, because he's so consistent. So it's not just me. It's happened to the best of them as well, you know. But you have to suffer a few knockbacks, you know, after a win, but. I'm going to keep myself mentally and physically fit. I'm going to make sure I give myself every chance to push on. I want to get into the top 32, and obviously the aim somewhere down the line would be top 16, because there's no reason why I can't.
Be honest, Jordan, how many times have you watched that final back? You must have watched it a few times.
Not going to lie, especially the last frame, you know, because I'm just thinking, I actually remember what I was thinking every single shot. It was just, you know, just living and breathing again. It's you have to sort of watch it back as well, you know, because you sort of have to remind yourself, you know, especially when you're going to have, you know, dark moments like every player does. You know, you can look back at that and think, right, well, I can't do it under pressure. I've dealt with the greatest pressure of all. But yeah, watching it back again, it was very emotional. Even more emotional watching it than I was actually in after the match itself. So yeah, it's nice to reminisce. Definitely is.
Obviously now it's all about the World Championship. As you say, you know, now there are going to be crowds. You want to get there and sort of experience it properly, and also go there having played there already, so you know what it's like at the Crucible. We don't know yet who you're going to play in the qualifiers, but you've got two rounds to get through. Well, there's a lot of pressure on everybody, but I guess the point is no one wants to play you now, do they?
Possibly not, you know, and like we said earlier on, you know, it's probably going to get them, whoever draws me is probably going to get themselves a little bit up for it now, you know, because they know I'm a ranked tournament winner, they know, you know, if I'm a feat in the tour, and, you know, I belong to be up there with one of the best. So yeah, it's we all know what the qualifiers are like. It's gonna be very tough. Everybody wants to get to the Crucible. It's gonna be a lot of pressure on all the guys in the tour, you know, fighting for tour survival. Fortunately, I'm not in that position. I know what it's like. So yeah, I'm really, really looking forward to the qualifiers, and you know, hopefully get to the Crucible again.
Well, Jordan, thanks for being with us this week. And you winning that tournament, it created something I've very rarely seen in snooker, which is I didn't see anyone who wasn't happy for you. Even Ronnie O'Sullivan fans, they saw the story, they recognised all the effort you put in. It was one of the great moments that I can remember in the game. And I hope that you have many more, because you, as you say, you're sort of, if we cut you, you'd bleed snooker, wouldn't you?
Oh, definitely, yeah, definitely. Yeah, well, thanks for having me, Dave. It's been a pleasure talking to you, and hopefully you can, you know, kick on from here.
Thanks, Jordan. Sports Social Podcast Network.